Welcome back to another live session here on the Rhythm and News Service of Jefferson Public Radio, also streaming online at www.ijpr.org. Today, I am joined in the studio by Mr. David Lindley. Welcome to JPR, David.
Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
I am well. Let me start by wishing you a soon-to-be birthday. Happy birthday.
Yay.
And this is a big one.
It's a big one. I've got it planned. I'm either going down on my birthday or the day right after down to the Social Security Department.
How old will you be?
I'll be 70.
Congratulations.
I'll say I want my check. I'm the maximum amount. Thank you so much.
A number of years ago, Rolling Stone magazine came up with the term for you of a maxi-instrumentalist. Not a multi-instrumentalist, but a maxi-instrumentalist.
A maxi-instrumentalist.
How many different instruments do you know how to play at this point?
There's a lot of them that are really similar. They're in the bouzouki family. There's bouzouki, bouzouk, saz, baglama, divan saz, chumbush, all these different instruments that are pretty much the same. It's like a sitarn, you know.
And for those that aren't familiar with the bouzouki, describe generally
what bouzouki,
that is.
The bouzouki is a cousin of the original instrument, which was called a tambour. And a tambour came from Afghanistan, and then it went everywhere, and it went into China, and it went into Persia, the Middle East, and then it went to Greece, it went to Turkey, and it became all these different variations. It became the bouzouki, which was six strings with metal frets and with a Western scale. So, and then they added a fourth set of strings on there so guitar players could play it. And that's what you see in all the Greek restaurants, the guys, you know, ripping it up and playing faster than you can possibly think. Yeah.
You once said that playing instruments that are unfamiliar to Westerners was part of a personal campaign to rouse audiences from the musical comas induced by American corporate pop.
I am so good. it actually is, and we set out in the '60s to do that kind of thing, and it was just like it because you know, electric guitars are fabulous. I mean, they're great, they're wonderful, you know. And I went from electric guitar to slide electric guitar, and then before that, I had been playing bluegrass music, so there was five string banjo and fiddle. Then there was electric fiddle. So, and then as far as the Middle Eastern instruments go, they're very similar to American instruments, you know, and Western instruments. So you can play. I'll play some things on this bouzouki I have over here that are kind of traditional Middle Eastern style, but with a mountain music song.
So banjo was first for you?
Actually, baritone ukulele, then guitar, and then I really seriously got into the banjo.
Right.
Five strings.
5 years in a row, won the award, best banjo player.
Yeah, Very serious.
Did you get to a point with banjo where you felt like you had learned as much about it as you could and started moving on to other instruments?
No, no, I never did. I never felt that way at all.
I don't see much of you with a banjo in your hands these days, online or anywhere.
Because where I stopped, Bela Fleck took over and went, you know, and took it so far, you know. It's just him and Tony Trischka and Tony Furtado and a lot of these players, just amazing players. And besides, I was into the oud and the bouzouki and the saz at that time. And so I play banjo tunes on the bouzouki, and it sounds like it should be played on that instrument, you know. So,
well, in recent years, the instrument that I tend to see you most often with is this, that is,
yes,
on your lap right now. What is it?
This is a Hawaiian guitar. This is a... It's generically, it's called a Weissenborn, because it's... Hermann Weissenborn invented this. It's a guitar body with a hollow neck. It goes all the way up. And it's hollow, so it has this giant sound. Some people think it's a dulcimer, you know, a mutant dulcimer, but it's not really. It's its own thing. It's its own world. It's a whole band all in one instrument.
Can we hear you play something
sure
on
can,
it?
Sure can.
Sure can.
never knew that love could be so strong. Make me think about leaving my home. But this kind of love just about to drive me mad. One more night like last night, I might have to pack my bag by the minute. Taste of forbidden fruit. Now I just can't turn it loose. What is this thing that make me break all the rules and make a man want to act a fool? You got that love technique, really cracks me up. Once or twice a week, girl, that just ain't enough. Got all kind of people trying to change my point of view. They think I'm winning, and all I want is you. But they made me leave home, girl. Leave home, girl.
That is David Lindley live in the studios of Jefferson Public Radio. You're right. That thing puts out tremendous noise, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Is that due to the neck or?
It's, well, one of the reasons is in particular about this guitar, it's made out of this wood called sapele. It's African mahogany, which I think is the best wood for these things ever. And it's all really consistent. And it's got interlocking grain, and it's in rows, and it looks like it's striped. And it's in between Honduras mahogany and rosewood. Yeah. So it's kind of real hard mahogany, like Cuban mahogany.
You have been making music now on the big stage since mid to late 60s. Is that about accurate, with Kaleidoscope?
Yeah, mid-60s. I started playing bluegrass music when I was in high school. I played at Disneyland.
Really?
Out in front of the mine train.
Was this banjo, the banjo era?
Yeah, five-string banjo and fiddle. And we met Uncle Walt and Mrs. Disney. They used to come down and see us play. And it was like Westworld. We took our breaks in back of Casa de Fritos. And we got to go underneath them, you know, where they had all the pipes and the ducts and all the wiring and stuff like that. It's an amazing place.
You could see the internals.
See the internals, and it was really something else, you know.
You know, over the last few years, internet technology has made things a heck of a lot easier. But for a long time, despite the fact that you had put out many records over the years, they were not the easiest things to find.
No. Uh-uh.
You did most of this yourself, right? You released albums?
Yeah. The CDs that I've made, after I got through with Electrosylum, And I was in a band, El Rayo X. I put a bunch of stuff together, and it was kind of like Kaleidoscope 2. We used all different kinds of musical influences, and a lot of reggae, a lot of ska, which I picked up in England, and did that for a long time. And after I got out of that contract, I said, oh, I should just do it myself. And I was inspired by Ani DiFranco, who did her own thing and did it out of her apartment, which was an amazing thing. And I found out how that was done. And I also talked to John Prine and Al Brunetta and Hisao Shinagawa at the Oh Boy Records. And they said, oh, yeah, you can do it. And they kind of helped me through it. So, and it's so easy. It's amazing. It really is so very easy to
you,
do.
You end up losing out a little bit on just the prevalence of distribution, but the upside for every unit, right?
The distribution thing now is like leaps and bounds better than it used to be. You don't have to go through the rack jobbers and all this kind of stuff. It's on the internet. People order direct. With a credit card, they can do that. And now we're getting ready to make it so that everything will be available for download, direct download. And you don't have to, no atoms involved, no plastic involved. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Is it a fair categorization to say that many of your songs are on the goofy or humorous or, I don't know what term you would necessarily use, but a lot of your songs are very lighthearted. Is that just due to your personality on a day-to-day basis?
A lot of them now, the ones that I'm doing out on the road now, are real heavy. Yeah, it's like Warren Zevon's tune, Beneath the Vast Indifference of Heaven. You don't get any deeper than that.
Yeah.
You know? And there's some other ones too, but I have both. I like to go between both of them.
I want to talk about how you ended up getting hooked up with Jackson Browne, because that starts a period of your life where all of a sudden you are the in-demand studio guy.
Yeah.
But I want to hear another tune first.
Okay.
What do you want to play next?
Let me see. Can I play it on this?
Sure.
Okay, and it should be kind of the same.
And so what is this that you picked up now?
This is an Irish bouzouki made in Romania. And it's a Greek instrument originally. And then as an Irish bouzouki, they made it flat back instead of a bowl back. And there's some other instruments that are in the same family called citterns. And they were in Europe for a long time. And the English guitar is one of the descendants of this instrument. But this particular one is, I put extra frets in it, so it has. So you can get those notes, otherwise you'd have this. And then when you put the African notes in there, you get this. Also happen to be several Middle Eastern cultures have the same notes.
And so what are you going to play on this one?
I like to do a song written by my friend Friz Fuller, who was a prolific songwriter, and he was kind of strange high desert character guy. Baby.
sitting in the laundromat, just trying to keep clean. 25 women, they arrive on the scene. Ain't no way, baby. Ain't no way, baby. Ain't no way you get to me.
That is David Lindley live on Jefferson Public Radio. We'll have audio from today's live session and a few photos of these amazing instruments up on our website as well. That's at ijpr.org. You know, I want to talk about your meeting of Jackson Browne, but before I do, a question occurred to me while you were playing that you have learned all of these ethnic instruments that all have slightly different fingerings.
Yeah.
And it's one thing to learn the manual manipulation of these fretboards.
Yeah.
But you also have to learn the language of that style of music. Otherwise, all you're doing is playing Western music on a slightly different instrument, right?
Yeah.
But you've done the job of learning both.
Yeah, I tried to learn as much as I could about Balkan music and Turkish music from different musicians. And I was fortunate enough to be able to have in the Kaleidoscope, the band Kaleidoscope, the bass player, Stuart Brotman, who played with everybody. I mean, he played bass with everybody. He plays cimbalom too, you know, like in the Hungarian restaurant. Mm-hmm. He plays that. He plays gudulka, which is like a tiny cello, and he plays all kinds of instruments, and he knows all the time signatures, the really strange ones, and the different ways to put them together. And so he taught us a bunch of that stuff. And Solomon Feldhaus, who was the saz player, the lead singer, oud player in Kaleidoscope, he knew a lot of music that he learned in Turkey. So, and since then, I've hung out with John Bilezikian, the great oud player, and Vika Najarian, Henry Besançon, all kinds of people that would show me things. And that's kind of how, that's the way I learned the banjo, too. I learned a lot of stuff from a guy named Mike McClellan, who taught me a lot of three-finger stuff. And then the other stuff, I used to sit in the audience at the Ash Grove and watch people play and say, oh, that's the way they do that. Yeah.
When did you first meet Jackson Browne?
I met him at a CBS convention in Century City in long, long time ago. This was in 68, I think it was. And a friend of mine, Chesley Milliken, was working with Epic Records at the time. And he says, oh, you should meet this guy. This guy's a great songwriter. So I met Jackson. And we talked about when he would go and watch Solomon play at this club in the South Bay and a lot of other stuff. And he needed a ride home, so I gave him a ride home. No, I think he was 12 or something.
What was so special about that music partner?
Well, it was, first of all, really great songwriter, great singer-songwriter, and it was an ideal combination because I could play. I could accompany his songs, and we tried it out a couple of times. One time in particular at the Troubadour, where I went to see Linda Ronstadt play, and a friend of mine was playing in her band, playing fiddle. So I borrowed his fiddle and got up on stage with Jackson, me and Ned Doheny. And Ned had a guitar, and Jackson was having problems with the audience. One guy in particular, known as the man with the gray flannel head. So he pointed him out to me, and I said, oh, that guy. Okay, good. So we played a bunch of stuff, stuff I'd never played before. So I just got up with the fiddle. I said, what key is it? It's D. And I said, oh, it's my key, boy. And it was these days, and very, very easy progression to follow. And Ned had played with him before, too. So everything clicked, really clicked. And the second time we got together was in Cambridge in England, and he and I played full sets and stuff at this club called the Magic Mushroom. And after that, we got together. We were talking about forming a band, you know. And it turned out to be his band, and I played in his band. And he was originally thinking it would be, you know, he would play in my band and be the singer and the songwriter, guitar player and stuff. So it turned out great. I mean, it was perfect combination.
And it's now been off and on 40 years.
Oh, yeah. We still play together. We do concerts and stuff together.
Right, and the last live album that came out.
Yeah, the one
absolutely beautiful.
In Barcelona. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was great.
Well, at this point, you're looking at your discography. You've got Jackson Browne appearances, Warren Zevon, Linda Ronstadt, who you mentioned, Curtis Mayfield, James Taylor, Bob Dylan. That's a heck of a resume.
There's Ry Cooder and
yeah?
Dolly Parton, and now there's Eric Clapton. I got to play on a J.J. Cale tribute album with Eric Clapton, and I played that guitar right there.
The Weisenborn.
Yeah, the Weisenborn, and he played fingerpick acoustic guitar. It was wonderful.
There's a brand new tribute album that just came out to Jackson Browne, and you're on that with Bonnie Raitt.
Yes.
Another great track.
Yeah, that was wonderful, too. Same kind of thing.
In musician circles,
yeah,
David Lindley is a household name. Has it ever felt slightly strange to you that outside of musician circles, David Lindley's not necessarily a household name? I mean, you're known so well as a studio musician, the go-to guy.
Yeah.
But yet, David Lindley albums are not Jackson Browne albums, per se.
No. Record companies really didn't know what to do with what I did. It didn't fall into a particular category until world music came along.
Right, because Kaleidoscope was way outside the norm for them.
Yeah, and so far outside the norm, and there was no such thing as world music at that time.
Until really the Paul Simon crossover with Ladysmith Black Mambazo, right?
That's what did it. And now everyone knows who King Sunny Ades.
Right.
That's right, you know. And you get, you know, and there's some bands that are going to come out of China that are going to scare people to death. I mean, really good ones. There's a Mongolian band that is, I just got sent.
And I'm sure it's
a recording of these guys, and it's, oh boy, it's so good. And and now you can go on YouTube and you can hear musicians play that you would have had to go to Turkey and sit out on their front porch and listen to them play. And now you can hear them play, and it's, you know, their music is not going to be lost forever. So I've heard some of the best things. There's one thing. There's a guy, he's a kanun player. Kanun is like a lap harp with nylon strings. And his name is Karaduman. K-A-R-A-D-U-M-A-N. And the instrument he plays is called kanun, K-A-N-U-N. And you type that Karaduman and kanun solo into YouTube. And he will be sitting there right in front of the camera. And he's quite mad. I mean, he is a gypsy playing classical Turkish music, and he plays the gypsy music, and he plays all this stuff, and he's just unbelievably great. And he plays this thing that will have you jumping up and down. Mm. It's the best thing I ever heard, and ordinarily, I would have never have seen that. I had to go to Tower Records every time I wanted to hear something new and hope right. Somebody would have put something out that I could use, you know.
May it mostly rest in peace.
Yeah, may it.
What, is there one location left in Tokyo, something like that?
I think there is.
Looking back on your career at this point, is there anything left for you to accomplish that you feel like you haven't had a chance to do yet?
Yeah, there is. There's a lot. And one of the things about that is that you always stay in student mode. You always have to be a student. You can never be anything other than a student. That's the only way to look at that, because there's so much more to learn. And the stuff that I play, I mean, on the bouzouki and the oud and the Hawaiian guitar, I mean, there's people that are just, that play circles around what I play. Unbelievably scary musicians, you know, I want to get more scary. Yeah,
I think
I gotta scare myself.
You are considered scary by many, Mr. Lindley. You know, one thing that I was curious about with all of these instruments that you have collected over the years.
Yeah.
Do you have any intention to do some home recordings to simply catalog the sound of all of these wonderful things?
That would take a long time. That would take a long time. I have a recorder that could do that, and the recordings. The home recordings that I would be doing would not necessarily be to catalog these instruments, but to play them and have people know what they sound like yeah. Know what the saz baglama sounds like, and what the difference between that and the divan saz, and what you have, you know, and people will know that if. You know, put it out on a CD, you know, just an info CD with some pictures, you know.
Yeah,
some really
like
good
a
photographs.
Smithsonian Folkways kind of thing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I was talking to a guy from the Smithsonian about, actually it was about banjos, and they're very interested in that kind of thing, so.
Can we hear one more tune before I let you go?
Sure, sure.
You're going to go back to the Weisenborn?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Weisenborn, and I'm going to unplug this, okay?
Thank you. time stands still. Time on my hands, time to kill. Blood on my hands in the till. Down at the 7-Eleven, gentle rain falls on me. All life folds back into the sea. We contemplate eternity beneath the vast indifference of heaven. The past seems realer than the present to me now. I've got memories to last me. When the sky is gray like it is today, I remember the times when I was happy.
That is David Lindley live here on Jefferson Public Radio. Mr. Lindley, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule.
Thank you. My pleasure.